Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Are you a renter? And how much are you paying every month in rent? Or maybe you're a landlord setting up because of the new or selling up because of the new regulations. The Daft report published today has shown record rent increases from December to March under the government's new rent reforms. So according to the new figures, rents are a whopping 80% higher than they were 10 years ago. That's an astonishing increase, isn't it? So how are these being felt by those who are actually renting and feeling the pinch, obviously? Well, first up, we're joined by Paul, who's in Galway. Renter yourself, Paul?
I am, yeah. I'm renting. I'm one of the lucky ones, so I'm in a relatively stable situation.
Okay, and tell us what your situation is.
Well, my situation is that I'm divorced, so I had to look for rent accommodation a number of years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, and I found it hugely difficult here in Galway to get to even view a place, let alone to rent a place. And the rentals at that time, I thought, were hugely exorbitant, but you could nearly double. The asking price now is nearly doubled for a lot of the rentals in Galway, if you can find them, because there are very, very few private rentals coming up in Galway.
So the supply is the first issue.
Supply is a huge issue, exacerbated, obviously. And I know this has been a well-discussed issue with Andrea and indeed yourself possibly as well, where Airbnb in areas like Galway that attract a lot of tourists, Airbnb has been a huge factor in limiting the availability of private rentals.
Okay, so people, rather than renting them out on an ongoing basis, see the Airbnb as a bit of an easier option maybe?
It's a quicker, easier earner.
More lucrative option.
It is. I mean, to be honest, there's two sides to that. There's the private Airbnb, if you want to come private, or single property businesses. But then you're getting a lot of corporate rentals now in Airbnb. So the number of Airbnbs, even if just anecdotally or just visually, if you look on the street, the amount of lockboxes that are appearing on streets like Bowling Green here in Galway, it's just been a huge increase in the last few years.
Mm. And are you locked into a fixed price now, Paul?
I'm very lucky in that I don't think I'd say I would have really struggled, only that I happened to run into somebody I worked with many, many years ago who's a landlord here in Galway. He was actually selling up a lot of his properties now. Due to the new rules, but also due to age. But I was very lucky that he offered me a place at a reasonable cost. I'm quite near to retirement, and when I retire, I'll actually be moving abroad. But for the next 2 to 3 years before I retire, thank God I'm in a secure situation.
Yeah, and from a landlord's point of view, he knew you, so there's a huge trust there, which is obviously hugely important.
Yes, yeah. Now, he's as I say, he's selling up his, at least two of his properties there went on sale. And I suppose it's a reflection of the market as well, that the asking price he originally was looking for has been exceeded by over 100,000 on one property and by 75,000 on the other. Two reasonably small flats. One has gone up over $500,000 now. The other one is at 375,000.
Well, it's interesting that you're in Galway today, Paul, because it's not just, we used to talk about Dublin a lot and the increases and the shocking prices in Dublin, but Daft.ie have said the rental costs are also increasing. There's four major cities outside Dublin that have really seen the impact. They are Galway City, Cork, Limerick and Waterford. So you are in one of those kind of high demand cities, I suppose. Paddy is on the line as well. What do you think about the problem, Paddy?
How are you doing?
Hi.
My heart goes out to Paul. I'm from Galway myself, and I was down there a couple of weeks ago for the Connacht Munster match, and we were walking out to the sports ground from Mayor Square, and the prevalence of lockboxes along the streets there is shocking. I don't think Galway City Council have any desire whatsoever to tackle the problem.
Mm.
The overwhelming amount of these Airbnbs are operating in breach of whatever planning permission they were built under, and they're being used as commercial enterprises, and I would imagine that a letter of warning from the council would either stop them doing that or would put them back onto the long-term rental market. So Paul sounds like he's been very lucky, but it's the same in Dublin. I mean, people say there's a lack of affordable housing in the country. There isn't. There's a lack of housing. Sorry, people say there's a lack of housing in the country. There isn't. There's a lack of affordable housing because you have investment funds that have over 45,000 properties throughout the country. A lot of build-to-rent stuff, and the rents that are then charged are absolutely extortionate. None of these vulture funds or investment funds pay any income tax or corporate tax on their rental income, because they were established under a Finance Act back in the early 2010s under Michael Noonan when he was finance minister, mm-hmm. in order to offload as much property as possible out of NAMA and return a profit to the taxpayer. That should have been time limited. I mean, it's effectively a free for all for the investment funds. They come in, they build, they charge, as you said earlier on there, I know people paying $4,000 for two bed apartments in Dublin.
Yeah.
Now, they're nice areas, but I mean, that's completely unsustainable. And the prevalence of, you know, a lot of building going on in Dublin is built to rent apartments. People don't want to rent for the rest of their lives. They want some sort of stability where they pay a mortgage. I mean, as crass as it may sound, you know, for people who have a choice to rent or to buy, renting is dead money. I mean, it goes nowhere.
Yeah. Are you renting at the moment, Paddy?
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I work in a civil service job. I get paid quite well. I'm quite lucky. But I mean, even I can't afford to buy within kind of Dublin city centre or even the suburbs. I mean, if I were to look to buy, I'd be probably looking at the guts of an hour commuting each way every morning and every evening. So, I mean, that's not, you know, realistic going forward.
Well, you're talking about the price. And interestingly, I think people will be really surprised by this. The average market rent for a two-bed apartment, not in Dublin, nationwide in early 2026, so at the start of this year, is now over €2,170 per month. You're probably not surprised to hear that, Paddy.
No. And as I said, I know people who are paying
well above
3,000, 3,200 or even 4,000 in some instances for two-bed apartments in Dublin. Now, admittedly, they're in nice areas of Dublin, but I mean, even around where I'm living, you know, where people would have gotten three-bed houses 5-6 years ago, I mean, you'd be looking to get a two-bed apartment now, yeah?
Yeah, of course. Let me just read some of these texts out. I'm a retired person in my 60s and have been served an eviction notice. I live in Galway City, where the rent increase is the highest, and I'm sick with fear about my future. The government has allowed this shortage of supply to happen over the past 15 years. So many landlords in the Dáil with vested interests, they should never be allowed to vote on housing matters, someone says. Let me bring in Ross, you're the landlord of properties in Galway. Have these rent increases impacted you? What's your situation, Ross?
So my situation specifically is a little different. So I was a small landlord. I had a home, like a family home, with my sister, and we ended up selling it because the rental pressure zone, or the RTP, was essentially had bottlenecked what we could charge for the property. And as small landlords, like Paddy was saying, like we're not an institutional investor, so we're paying half of essentially that rental income to the tax to revenue. So it's one of the points I wanted to make, you know, talking about this issue, is that it's not just small landlords. Like we as a country have an institutional memory of what landlords are, and it's a negative thing immediately. But government is half of that problem with the amount of tax they take on it. And to Paddy's point as well, institutional investors aren't paying any tax, so they're incentivized to just continue just purchasing properties. So they're competing with home buyers as small landlords leave the market. Those homes are highly sought after for those investors. And so right now, as a landlord, I'm sort of a landlord in, we'll say, in one respect, because I'm helping my aunt who's got dementia. She has two properties. She's in care right now. So the rental income from her properties is going to pay for her care. So I'm renting the properties and managing them and bringing them back to the market for the first time.
Okay.
But I actually called the show back in November about this issue. And I made the point then, and I checked just recently, but when you guys called me about coming on to the show today, just to check if anything changed. The main issue, there's a fundamental issue, and there's a reason why these rents are high. And Paddy's right, first of all, it's institutional investors. But the other issue is that small landlords are leaving because they don't have control over their own properties. The new legislation makes that worse. It doesn't make it any better. So small landlords are going to continue leaving the market as a result of that. And simply, the country is not going to be able to build properties fast enough to keep up with demand. And it's just it's a fundamental issue that hasn't been addressed with this legislation.
Yeah. Well, just to explain the new rule, under the reforms, the landlords can reset the rent only where it's below the market rate at the end of each 6-year tenancy. But this is only if the previous tenant left voluntarily or breached the tenancy agreement. So, and that came in the 1st of March, I think was, yeah, that new restriction. So that changed everything, do you think, Ross?
I think it did in some respects, right? I mean, that's a big deal. Every 6 years you can reset your rent, but things change. People's circumstances change over 6 years. Maybe you need to sell the property or maybe someone's moving back. Like, I'm overseas. I'm in the US right now. Unfortunately, both my parents aren't alive anymore. But if they were and I decided to move back from, I was in Australia, I'm in the US now. They may want me to move into one of their rental properties and they would be prevented from doing that. And that's why people are choosing Airbnb over renting, because you have control over the property. You can decide to sell it. You can decide to move a family member in, whatever, because circumstances change. So I think more legislation, more restrictions on landlords are not the answer. You know, we've seen this, like, I'm not a historian, but, you know, I know from what I have read that anything, more and more legislation on things like this makes the situation worse, not better. You know, we're not going to legislate our way out of this problem.
Yeah, and there needs to be some clear guidelines around that Airbnb situation as well. Claire Connolly, Managing Director of Claire Connolly Estate Agents in Dundrum, is on the line. Claire, what impact have you seen with the recent rent increases on the rental market in general?
Oh, gosh, Anna. Well, I can say it's quite chaotic at the moment.
It sounds it.
It really is, honestly, and trying to actually navigate it and manage it is extremely difficult from a state agency point of view. But, you know, I can really identify with what Ross was saying there. Basically, he was a small landlord,
yeah.
So he had no control over his property, so he's left the market. Now, that's exactly what we're seeing. I would say I've had to issue about 8 notice of termination since last October, November, where they literally, it's just not, a landlord is not going to want to hold on to the property, as you said, for 6 years. You don't know what's going to happen within that time frame. So it just makes it so difficult. So they're leaving the market, and I'm sure we'll see an awful lot more leaving the market as well. But then in relation to Paul and Paddy's, when they're renting, we have so few rental properties on the market. Last year, we would have had at least 30% more stock. Again, as of the 1st of March, as I said, they're not willing to tie themselves down to a 6-year fixed term. So landlords are possibly looking elsewhere, maybe to the short-term letting market.
Mm.
And we have tenants, and I just feel so sorry for them. They call in here into the office on a daily basis saying, look, please, can you help us find a property? What do we do? What do we have to do? And like, I just feel so sorry for them, but there's very, very little that we could do. We could just say, look, you know, look on Daft, or, you know, maybe draw up a short biography to try and make you stand out. But the key point here, as Paul, Patty and Ross have said, there is no stock on the market. And the landlords who now are able to go in with a no-fault eviction, as you rightly said, Anna, before the 1st of March, or just after the 1st of March, I should say, can now go in at full market rent. So it's just an impossible situation. I mean,
And I think, Claire, a lot of these landlords that we're talking about are not the big flashy property developers. They're probably people who've inherited the family home or are kind of accidental landlords. Is that exactly the majority of the cases that you're seeing?
Yeah, they're like Ross.
Yes.
Ross said there himself, he's a small landlord.
Yeah.
It wasn't financially viable. He has no control over his property for the next 6 years. So you can imagine, Anna, that may change even. Like, we don't know within that 6-year period, the legislation may become maybe more owners, we don't know. So it's just, they're so fearful. And you're right, as I say, the notice of termination that we've issued, the 8 notices of termination, were all small landlords, all my lovely, lovely landlords who've been more than fair. They've done their sums and they're saying, sorry, I'm not in this, I'm actually out. I just can't make this work. So I hear exactly what Paul, Patty and Ross are saying.
Mm.
That's exactly what I'm seeing here on the ground, Anna.
Let me just get your reaction to some of these texts coming in, Claire, if that's okay. I'm an accidental landlord of a house outside Galway City. Tenant just moved out and I'm going to Airbnb it now. I don't want to lose access to my property for 6 years and unable to raise rents for years due to the new rules. My previous tenant overstayed for several years as they could not find a place. Someone else is asking why Paddy won't don't do an hour long commute. It's pretty standard these days. Another texter, if I work hard, save and manage to buy a second property to use as a holiday home, why should I be expected to rent it on a long term basis and not be able to use it myself anytime I want to? Another texter says, I left my one bed apartment after 6 months in February. The landlord upped the rent by €100 a month. That's €2,000 a month for somewhere dark and cold. Are these stories, and you're very familiar with, Claire?
More than familiar.
And you could write the book. Familiar.
I really could. Honestly, I think the government really needs to revisit this. Honestly, it's just, it is, because we're exposed to both sides, obviously, of my landlords and my tenants. But exactly the text that I read out there, that's exactly what we're seeing on a daily basis, Anna. Every single day.
Shocking, shocking. The prices, yeah, and the lack of supply. Well, thank you indeed to Paul, Paddy and to Ross and to Claire Connolly as well for your insights on that. No doubt it's something we will come back to time and time again here on Lunchtime Live.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.